33 arrests have been made across 6 African countries in a first of its kind, operation targeting terrorist financing. We speak to Willem Els of the Institute for Security Studies about Operation Catalyst.
Michelle's a mom who traded in her Fiat 500 for this beast right here. But why the momentous move, huh?
I needed something bigger to keep up with my growing son in his mini sports bags.
When you traded in your car with We Buy Cars, was it an easy conversion?
I see what you did there. The process was just so easy. I was given a tablet, had to sign, and that was it.
Basically, We Buy Cars is no mess, no fuss. Okay, it was nice chatting. We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
Welcome, Willem.
Hello, Chris. Thanks for inviting me. Yeah, I think it was a very really big event. It was the first of its kind, as you mentioned, and it made a huge impact on Africa.
Willem, in which countries did this operation hit?
Okay, what they did is they focused on 6 countries, and those countries are Angola, in our region, Cameroon, Kenya, Namibia, and Nigeria, and then South Sudan. And it's strange that only those countries were targeted. There must be a reason for them to target them. If you look at, for instance, Nigeria is the financial hub for West Africa, where Kenya is a financial hub for East Africa, but they haven't targeted the financial hub for Southern Africa. That is South Africa. So that is quite interesting. But they looked at Namibia, they looked at Angola, and South Sudan is a bit of an outlier because there's not a lot going on there, a lot of turmoil and civil war going on. So the fact that they went there is actually surprising.
Mm. I was perplexed that they skipped South Africa because we know that South Africa has become a hub for terrorism financing.
Exactly. You know, some time ago, a team from Times did an investigation, and they came up with a conclusion that more than 6 billion rand is being channeled towards countries in conflict, and most probably going to terrorists in that groups in that country. And also, we saw that with Fatah when they greylisted us, that was one of the main concerns. And if you look at what's happening in South Africa, a lot of money is being generated. And we see that the main routes that it takes is to Puntland. And that's very interesting because in some of the cases, it came up that came before court. And then in Puntland is actually a self-governing area of Somalia that's not under control of the president of Somalia. They've got a separate government there. So that makes it very difficult for South Africa now to follow the money and even to interact with them. And if you want to subpoena people to come to testify in court, et cetera, it cannot happen. So that just makes it very difficult for us to follow that money. But we see that from there, the money is being channeled, of course, for their own operations, but it's also been channeled towards the DRC, the Central Republic of ISIS in Congo, as well as to West Africa, where ISWAP is very busy, the Islamic State in West Africa. But also we saw that it's being channeled towards the Islamic State in Mozambique, that is in Cabo Delgado.
Just going back to these arrests, Willem, can you break down the 83 for us? What were they for exactly?
Okay, if you look at terror funding and at your financial crimes, and especially at Fatah, they focus on 2 things. The one thing is of course, terror funding. And the second one that goes hand in glove with it is your money laundering. And your cyber crimes also come into that. So we see that billions and billions of rands are being channeled and being laundered, not only in South Africa. We saw that with all the evidence coming out in the commissions, how much money in tenders are there. But we see that they recovered. They screened 15,000 people and they uncovered $260 million US dollars just through that. And they say that with ongoing investigations, they then seized another $600,000 US dollars.
How long did this operation take, Willem?
Okay, they worked from September and up to July. And July to September, sorry. And they were very active. We see that they were helped by Interpol in Lyon. where they have a lot of capability and expertise that we do not have in Africa necessarily, but also they took hands with AfriPol. Now, people must understand where AfriPol is coming from. You know, AfriPol has been there in name for a long time, where they attempted to actually establish a single police service for Africa that will be coordinated by the African Union, very much on the same lines as Europol that is established in Europe, that help them. That's sort of almost like your FBI that is working in all the states on certain matters, like with certain jurisdictions and so on. But it never really took off, and it never got the support that it was really that it really deserved. And it is really at the moment, it is almost like a lame duck that is situated there in Addis. So for them now to come up with this one, I think it goes a long way to strengthen the course of AfriPol and to see how they and Interpol can take hands in order to make our continent a safer place.
So who coordinated AfriPol and Interpol in this operation?
Interpol is coordinated by Interpol itself. If I'm not mistaken, about 119 member countries. The headquarters is in Lyon, in France. And in Africa, we've got basically four different regions. Here in Southern Africa, you've got the SADC region or the SARPCO region. And then in East Africa, you've got in Kenya, the IAPCO or the East African Communities region. Then in Central Africa, you've got the CAPCO region. And in West Africa, the WAPCO region. All the countries north of the Sahel, they are regarded as to be part of the Middle East or the Arabic center. So that is where Interpol comes from. But if it goes to AfriPol, AfriPol is actually controlled by the African Union, is one of the arms or one of the organs of the African Union.
Who initiated this operation?
I think it was the new, you know, last year we got a new Secretary General for Interpol incoming. Before him, it was Dr. Jürgen Stock from Germany. He was here for a long time, did a lot of good work. And now when the new broom was elected, as we call him, he's from Brazil. He came in and he had new ideas, he had new visions and a new strategy. And one of that was to take hands with AfriPol and also to actually see how they can look at your problems at the moment. It's been identified as, you know, 12 countries of, I think it's 23 countries at the moment are being graylisted in the world, and 12 of those countries are from Africa. So that's more than half of those countries are from Africa. It just indicates that there's a problem, and not, as I mentioned, with a terror funding that is really big, but also your money laundering that is being done in these countries. And if you do not curb that, then, you know, they say that the illicit economy in Africa is almost twice as big as the legal or the normal economy.
Willem, what makes tackling terrorist financing so complex?
Yeah, in the first place, you know, these people make use of very complex means. In Africa, for instance, or in your Arab speaking world, you have what they call the Hawala system. Now, that's an ancient system of trust in how money is being moved, and it's very secretive, and it doesn't leave a big paper trail. So that is being abused. It's a good system that has been used for ages by your merchants and by these people, but now it's being abused by your terror organizations as well. And then also, you know, they venture into cryptocurrencies. For instance, there's a case currently ongoing it's been on the books for a very long time in KwaZulu-Natal. It was a couple from the UK that was actually killed by Del Vecchio, and he's alleged to be killed. The case is still ongoing. And then they tortured them, and they extracted the passwords from their credit cards and everything from them. And then not too long after that, there was a guy apprehended in Rotterdam in the Netherlands, and he bought cryptocurrencies, and he sent it to ISIS from there, and using the credit card credentials of this family. So that guy has been found guilty. He's currently serving time in the Netherlands, but here we see that the case is still ongoing, and not going very fast anywhere.
Yes, I was surprised to see Angola on the list, but they made a huge discovery there, did they not, in this operation?
Yeah, yeah. You know, Angola has been an outlier for it's a tremendously wealthy country in terms of the resources and the oil and the diamonds that they got. But it's also one of the poorest countries in Africa. So that is why one of the reasons they went. But also the current chairperson of the African Union or the serving chairperson is also the president of Angola. So I think that is one of the while they were busy with this operation. So I think that was one of the reasons why they highlighted him, and he wanted to become very visible. We see that especially with the peace talks in the DRC between the M23 and the government. We saw that that President Lorenzo he really tried very hard to actually bring them together. So he's very active, and I think this is also he's trying to clean up the country after the previous government that was there for a very long time and a lot of allegations of corruption and looting that took place. So I think that is part of his strategy to bring that in. But also what I see here is that Interpol becoming more active in utilizing their resources. They got resources that are first world. In many ways that many of your poorer African countries do not have, and with them coming in with that, it actually paved the way for these criminals that were arrested. You know, they actually hid behind the incompetence and but also the insufficient funding and expertise that is in our African countries in order to exploit it for these means.
Now, Willem, it sounds like what is really needed is good intelligence in penetration of these organizations. To what extent is that happening in South Africa?
Yeah, in South Africa, our intelligence is still not where it's supposed to be. But the fact I've actually laid bare some of our deficiencies. And because of that, you see that the FIC Act has been amended. There's been more funds allocated. We see that the GILAP Act is in process, and they're trying to get that up. It's also because of the recommendations of FATF. And we're really not where we need to be or where we want to be. But we are getting there. But 2 months ago, we were in Dar es Salaam, where we had a conference on terror funding and especially also your money laundering. And it was very encouraging to see how Africa is picking up and how it is becoming the focus. And that's mainly because of the countries that are being greylisted. So greylisting is not all bad for us, even though it's bad for the economy. It was like a wake-up call for us, but also a wake-up call for these countries to start to get their house in order. And we see that there's a lot of assistance from your first world countries in order to assist them. But also what is a challenge for us in Africa, if you look at your major intelligence or your major events, and you look at the intelligence. For instance, let's look at the Westgate attack. We see that about 12 months before the attack, a Western intelligence service actually provided them with intelligence that there's going to be an attack and that it's going to be in Nairobi. And then 3 months before the attack, they gave them another update. They said it was going to be a Mumbai-like attack and that it will be at a partially Israeli-owned mall. And there are not many of them there. So that really gave them very good intelligence. But unfortunately, if you look at the parliamentary report of Kenya, they did not pick up that intelligence. They did not act on that intelligence. And one of the biggest things is that whenever there's a major intelligence that is being revealed, it seems that it doesn't come from Africa. It comes from the other agencies that are partners, and then we start to work with it. And maybe because they've got much more resources than us, et cetera, et cetera. But that just indicates, you know, whenever we get the Americans or the Brits or someone in South Africa warning us about something, not to push them back, but to go and sit down with them, look at the intelligence and see if we can verify what they do and take it from there. With all the terror funding cases, we see that the intelligence is not only coming from South Africa, it's also coming from partners in other countries. And it makes it quite problematic because at the end of the day, when you go to court, you have to subpoena those people to come and testify. And it's always difficult to get other people here to testify.
Mm. Yeah, so you actually have to rework that intelligence and independently verify it so that you can take it to court. But South Africa has not really had a history of being grateful for foreign intelligence. Well, I'm talking about in the last 30 years, and often feels insulted by it or rejects it or is suspicious of it.
Of course, and I think it's because in most of the cases your intelligence fraternity is being exposed. They were found lapping, and they embarrassed that they didn't come with it first. But if it's for the good of the country, and if it's in this field, sometimes it's better to just take it on the chin and admit your deficiencies, and then work with these people, and then try to solve and prevent. Because intelligence, I always say that a leader like a president working without a credible intelligence is like someone working with a stick, a blind person. He can't preempt. They cannot do anything proactively. They always end up, countering these challenges reactively instead of proactively. And that is what intelligence gives you. You've got very good proactive intelligence. You can stop and you can prevent a lot of problems.
Now, there have been allegations over many years that this government has turned a blind eye to the operations of terror-linked individuals and organizations on its soil.
Yeah, I think if you look back in the 90s, especially with Bagat, we had the Bagat bombings there. There were more than 300 bombings in a period of just under 2 years. So intelligence there was really lacking, because after 94, there was a hesitancy, there was distrust, there was a lot of challenges that we had to go through in the moving into the new South Africa and the systems. And of course, these people, they exploited that. And we lacked that. And even if you look then at your trial that came just after that, your Boeremacht trial, the one that lasted for so long, it really exposed some. But at the end of the day, our intelligence was really working there. But there was an incident where the Worcester bombing, I don't even remember, that's quite a long time ago, where they placed the bomb at one of the supermarkets in Worcester just before Christmas. It detonated, many people got injured, I think two or three people got killed. But that cell actually had placed an IED, a bomb, in one of the tunnels where the Blue Train was going to go through. And we only discovered the IEDs after the train went through, because it didn't function. It malfunctioned. We had no intelligence on that. So that exposed actually our capacity on that. And then also there was another attack on the Blue Train where near Leodrungstad, the right-wing group actually blew up the railway line, but it wasn't a very good job, and the train went over it and actually continued. And both those incidents actually took place with Mandela on the train, because it was the inauguration of the new Blue Train. So, and I was on the train. So that is why we know that. I was part of the security contingency, and we had no intelligence on that.
Good heavens. You and Mandela, President Mandela on that train.
Just think what it would have happened. And apart from that, there were a lot of foreign dignitaries and premiers and heads of state on the train as well. So he invited all his friends, and was a big we traveled there for about twice as long that it took us to get down there, because in every main station he would stop, and then he would, like at Kimberley, he would stop, at Klerksdorp they would stop, and then all the people would gather there, and he will speak, you have a speech there and greet the people, and then we move on. So it was a stop and go trip, and that was the inauguration of the new Blue Train.
And when did you find out that it was supposed to have been blown up?
Yeah, afterwards, with the one in Leodrungstad, the driver of the train actually indicated that there was something wrong after we passed it, and we were on the follow train. There were two trains going, and then we called the guys to inspect, and they found the place where it was blown up. And yeah, and later the cell was arrested in Klerksdorp. They actually went to the TRC and they got amnesty.
That was Willem Els of the Institute for Security Studies speaking to BizNews about the fight to tackle terrorist financing. I'm Christine. Thank you, Willem.